Hey, everybody. This is Adam, host of the podcast you're about to listen to. Don't skip this. It's not an ad. Just dropping in to let you know this episode was originally recorded and released back in July of 2018. But at the time, it was a subscriber-only episode. We're releasing it publicly now because, I'm going to be honest, I don't think any episode we could possibly release would be more timely than this one, because I think we can all agree the most important thing happening in the United States this November is obviously the NBA draft, which is happening Wednesday, November 18th. And to celebrate that, we're re-releasing this episode, which is about the 1985 NBA draft, which seems like it might have been rigged just a little bit. Now, all of that said, if you were a subscriber on Patreon or Supercast, you would be getting a bonus episode today, which would be part two of our exploration into the strange, strange death of Senator Paul Wellstone. That's a whole series of episodes, and it'll be out publicly in some form at some point, but if you're a subscriber, you can give it a listen right now. So fine, I guess this was kind of an ad. Patreon.com/unpops, unpopsnetwork.supercast.tech. Anyway, let's listen to this episode about the 1985 NBA draft. Thanks, everybody. We love you.
People of Earth, your planet has to be destroyed.
Welcome to Conspiracy, the show, with your hosts, Adam Todd Brown and Connor McSpadden.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Conspiracy the Show. I'm Adam Todd Brown.
I'm Brett Rader.
You're not Connor McSpadden.
Oh, I am not.
Connor is writing for a Comedy Central roast.
Oh, that's cool.
The next couple weeks. I don't know if I'm supposed to say which one, so I'll just say the...
I think it's actually been announced. I actually don't remember who it is, but it's like...
Bruce Willis?
Yes, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, yeah.
I've read about it online.
Yeah, he's writing for that. He posted about it on Instagram, so I assume I'm fine. We're talking... It's still sports month. I don't know why I said still. This is the second week of sports month
it
on
still
Conspiracy
is.
The Show. So it still is
what
sports
was last
month.
Week?
Last week, we talked about Barry Bonds and my personal conspiracy theory that Major League Baseball kind of manufactured the steroid scandal.
They supplied the steroids.
To cover up the amphetamine scandal and to discredit Barry Bonds.
Mm.
So this week, we're talking about the 1985 NBA draft lottery, of course.
The conspiracy to that's the biggest conspiracy of all sports conspiracies, right?
I think so.
Well, I think we'll glance over a few other NBA ones, but
the NBA, that's what I should add before we get started, that a lot of the research for this episode comes from the book The 25 Greatest Sports Conspiracy Theories of All Time by Elliot Kalb. And then there's also some YouTube videos. We'll put up links. You get it. This seems believable to me just because the NBA just seems like a shady outfit.
Now, I was aware of this for a long, long time, and I did zero research into it until you sent me this would be the topic, and you sent me a couple of links and YouTube videos to look over. I had heard one version of the conspiracy theory, which is the hardest to prove.
Right.
And I didn't even know the version that we're going to go through today, which is basically like very, very provable.
Yeah.
Like the only thing you can't prove is like
the intent
of people who, you know, of this thing that happened 33 years ago.
Right. But it seems like the intent is I think they make a good case for this.
Yeah. Well, we can make a good case for like what the motivation would be.
Right. And the thing about the NBA, they have cheating scandals pretty often, but they usually land on the side of the referees.
They're a good mark.
Yeah. They're
a good fall guy.
What?
Good fall guy. The referees. Nobody likes him anyways.
I thought you were making a reference to the TV show, the Fall Guy for some reason. My ears perked up. Watched that a lot as a kid. Who was the ref that got in trouble?
I don't remember.
He actually went to
Once you click on it, I'll remember.
Prison, yeah.
Tim Donaghy.
Tim Donaghy. And I remember that guy. Like, he was a NBA ref for a long goddamn time and eventually served 15 months in prison for betting on games and possibly fixing games with the help of or at the behest of the mafia.
Yeah.
And it comes up all the time. People point out that officiating is always, not always, but there are a lot of cases where it seems like they're officiating in a way to make a certain outcome happen.
And yeah, so just to explain for the people who don't really follow sports, it's I mean, I guess it's easy to do in really any sport, but basically what a referee will do is they'll sort of officiate a game in a way that certain, like maybe lots of players on one team get fouls and players on the other team don't really get fouls.
Right.
Or they try and keep it within a specific point range. So, you know, just whatever whatever the higher ups are like, oh, we want this game to go under the
right
point total or over or whatever.
Yeah, the most recent example is actually this year's Western Conference Finals, Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals, which was it was pretty clear that Golden State was just not getting called for fouls.
Yeah.
And Houston was getting called for everything.
Also, Game 6 of the 0-1 or 0-2 Western Conference Finals between the Lakers and the Sacramento Kings.
Right.
Rockets Warriors Game 6. This is the end of
this
the
is way too long to
started to shift
watch all of it.
Out there.
But
Durant gets called for
if you go out to YouTube, Chris H's YouTube page, Rockets versus Warriors,
wasn't even facing the
WCF Game 6 officiating.
If they want to call it cool, they just need to call it the same way on the other
and
end.
There are
here is the first
a lot of examples of Houston getting called for fouls that Golden State definitely does not get called for.
This was his first
and
the
thinking behind it is that the NBA wanted Golden State in the finals as opposed to Houston.
Being restricted by
oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah, well, or they wanted
to
go 7 games.
Turnovers of
yeah.
that nature.
And
this next possession
all right, having that in the background is going to fucking wear me out.
It was destroying me.
Yeah, and the game you just mentioned, I would argue every championship Shaquille O'Neal won with the Lakers.
That's three of them, baby.
Was an example of horrible officiating because they would just let Shaquille O'Neal elbow a motherfucker in the chest and they would never call it.
I wonder, as the Lakers apologist, I wonder if they let him get those extra calls because they knew in the last 5 minutes of every game people would hack a Shaq.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but that's...
Like, basically, people would just intentionally foul him.
Because he was a terrible free throw shooter. Yeah. Yeah, it could have been, but it was... Yeah, the game that really stands out during that Lakers run is they were playing the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, I think it was also Game 6 of the Western.
Yeah.
I think it was 0-1 or 0-2. I don't remember specifically which.
I believe 0-2.
Free throws as the Lakers.
And,
yeah, it was 0-2.
Yeah, 2002. And Sacramento was up by like 15 at one point.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, everyone who's guarding Shaq just fouls out.
Yeah.
And there's one point where Vlade Divac is already on the bench because he's in foul trouble. And Scott Pollard fouls out. And Vlade Divac just starts laughing uproariously at the call because it was like the. If you compare what people do to Shaq compared to what Shaq does to people in this game, like Shaq should have fouled out. I think that's more the thing, is Shaq would have fouled out of every game in like the second quarter.
Well, that's sort of, I mean, this gets into a larger conversation about like what superstars are allowed to do versus what other people are allowed to do. Routinely, I mean, from Kobe and Michael Jordan to LeBron and Durant and Chris Paul and James Harden today, all the superstars travel all the time. They
take
like 7 steps to do a layup.
Allen Iverson double dribbled like frequently, or they would carry.
But if you're a rookie player, you don't get that call. And there's sort of this weird hierarchy of like in the artistry of refereeing, they give the better they give the better players more benefit of the doubt on these calls.
Yeah,
and stuff. And
it's is that super loud?
Yeah, it is really loud. Now I understand why you say it's really loud all the time when I am engineering. It's just the mix is different for. How about now?
Everybody coming in hacking down. Here's a guy
who knows. Well, part of it is just I have a hard time concentrating on two things at once.
Yeah,
I'm just a bit Asperger-y.
So, yeah, it happened a lot during. It happened with Jordan a lot too. I'm a Bulls fan, so I'll be objective about it. And it wasn't so much. It was more the traveling with Jordan.
Yeah. Well, basically, all this comes down to for the layperson is that there are many examples of star players getting foul calls or players on preferable teams,
super teams,
big market teams, Lakers, Bulls, Golden State Warriors versus the Sacramento Kings. You know. Versus, I mean, I guess Houston's a bigger city than San Francisco, but, you know, a lot of this, before we get into the meat of this, this is all the context is basketball is better or the league makes more money. The league is healthier when there are power teams that are in large media markets.
Right.
Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, I guess you could add to that.
Yeah, they've been added to it. Like, it right. used to be the other I mean, way. Golden State used to be the
third or fourth biggest in the country. So it's weird that Houston doesn't get that sort of deferential treatment.
Yeah.
Liberal bias. But this is not just a phenomenon in basketball. This is baseball too. The league likes it and the rule and we can get into sort of how the salary cap plays into this as well. Baseball does better when the Yankees and the Dodgers are doing better.
Right.
Right. And the Cubs and, you know, these teams that have long histories and are from big markets where there are millions and millions of people watching. The NFL is very popular in America only, but the NFL is sort of constructed and the rules are the rules that the front offices play by in terms of them signing which players, how long they can keep players and stuff. The rules are made in the NFL so that there's a lot of variance each year between which teams are good and which teams are bad.
Right.
There are still teams like the Patriots, which are really, really good for 15 years or so.
Right.
But Jacksonville made the AFC. They almost went to the Super Bowl. They were one game away from the Super Bowl. Maybe they'll be good for the next year or two, and then they can drop off again.
And yeah.
Jacksonville being really good at making the Super Bowl for a year or two doesn't hurt the NFL the way that in baseball, if it's like Seattle versus Tampa Bay.
Arizona.
Those are in the same league. Yeah, Arizona versus Tampa Bay. That's like, oh, that's a big whiff.
It's a bummer.
It's a bummer for baseball. And basketball is very similar. They want the Lakers to do it. That's why LeBron's on the Lakers right now. You know.
Yeah, imagine the NBA Finals being like Sacramento versus the Charlotte Bobcats.
Yeah.
You'd kill yourself. No one would watch that.
Exactly. So there is.
And weirdly, it almost never happens in the NBA.
So to get into the 1985 draft, you have to understand that it is in the league's benefit for teams like the Knicks to do well, for teams like the Celtics, the Lakers to do well.
And it's been argued for a long time that they manipulate the game in a way to make that happen.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the crux of what we're talking about.
We have
today.
This video evidence right here of these. We have this the Golden State Warriors versus the Houston Rockets. The Warriors are getting a lot of calls. It's because they're a super team.
Yeah.
Steph Curry is the most – if you ask anyone under 17 years old who their favorite player is, it's Steph Curry.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. Even though he's like 6'3 and incredible, he looks on camera because he's so much shorter than the other guys. He looks like he's 5'4 and he has these sweet baby blue eyes.
Yeah.
He looks like a kid next door and kids love him. He's kind of got this panache and he like chews on his mouthpiece a certain way and he fires up these crazy three pointers. Durant, obviously, very, very popular player. On the other side, James Harden, who dates Kardashians and goes to strip clubs all the time, and Chris Paul, who you might recognize from TV and being a lot of state farm ads, but actually isn't really well liked in the community.
Yeah, and when I was a kid, it was Jordan, obviously.
Yeah.
And if a really good example of Jordan getting away with a huge foul in a huge moment is his final shot with the Chicago Bulls when they win that sixth NBA championship. He just pushes Brian Russell out of the way. Mm-hmm. There's, and the announcer goes, "Oh, Russell slipped." It's like, no, he got shoved in the ass by Michael Jordan forcibly.
I mean, it's a bit human nature, right? Like, you know, if you have, let's put this in, let's make this an example we could all think of. I mean, you don't know my brother, but my brother Ethan is like just not the favorite son. I'm the favorite son. I'm sorry, Ethan. Ethan knows this. Ethan and I are bros, but hey, but. Anytime I do anything, my parents, my grandparents, God rest their soul, are like, "Oh, Brett, how cool. Wow. What a cool thing." And then the moment my brother talks, they're like, "Oh, shut up, Ethan." And it's just like, and it, Ethan and I could do the same thing. And it's like, "Oh, good job, Brett. Oh, you're so smart." And they just hate whenever Ethan does anything. It's a bit of like, well, we want Michael Jordan to win and we don't want John Stockton to win. We don't want the Utah Jazz to win. Like,
yeah. And I was always, as a kid, I always hated the Western Conference. Like, I thought aside from the Lakers, the Western Conference was just a boring fucking conference to watch.
I wasn't super up on the Spurs. Well, the Spurs kind of suck. Like, even as someone who watches a lot more basketball now, there's some. The Spurs are like boring. The
Spurs
are like the Spurs are like are a bit like the Patriots a bit where they're like it's automatic that they'll be there every year and it's like actually quite boring and monolithic.
Right. Fuck the Spurs.
Yeah.
But today we're talking about the 85 draft lottery, which was the first time the NBA ever handled their draft in this way, which is an interesting thing. And the argument is that the NBA rigged this draft lottery so Patrick Ewing would go to New York.
Patrick Ewing, you know, in 1985, coming out of Georgetown University, big center. He's one of the more famous basketball players of the 80s and 90s. He's really, really good. He ended up having a great career despite not winning a championship.
Right. But at the time he was coming out of college, people assumed he was going to be like the next Bill Russell
or something.
Like he was, and he kind of was, but he didn't. He just never won a championship. And what we were just saying about the NBA needing a team in a major market to be playing well really applied to the Knicks at the time because they were great in the late 60s and 70s. They won a couple championships, and then they just sucked for 14 solid years.
Yeah.
Like they were terrible for a long time, and their tickets, like they used to sell out Madison Square Garden all the time, their ticket sales dropped, people stopped watching, and the NBA was making less money. And at the end of the 86 season, their television contract was coming up, so they needed something good to happen in New York to get more.
The TV contracts are how all these leagues make tons and tons of money. So and I think it's 2021 when the NFL's contracts are up. This is how all the AFC games are on CBS and all the NFC games are on Fox. That's all sort of decided every 4 or 5 years with these TV contracts. These TV networks pay literally billions and billions of dollars to the leagues for the right to have, you know, certain games. And with basketball, ABC has the rights now. So they pay billions and billions of dollars, literally, capital B billions, to the league for the rights to air those games. So it's a big deal.
Right. And the NBA at the time had a lot of motive to fix this draft. They had their popularity, like they got the NBA got really popular again in the 80s, but it was the late 80s. It was before it was, you know, that was more Jordan and the Pistons in the late 80s, but this we're talking 1984, 85,
sort of Magic Bird era. It's popular, but it's kind of only, but it's really
popular for Celtics and Lakers fans.
Yeah, it's popular basically in Massachusetts and Southern California.
Right.
Yeah.
And I watched a lot of it because my dad was for some reason a Lakers fan. But beyond that, I didn't Like, I didn't give a shit about the NBA at this time either. I mean, I was a young kid, but I watched a lot of sports. And they also had a huge cocaine problem. Like,
when you look back
into
it,
every sport
every industry had a cocaine problem.
But their players were being really vocal about it, like doing interviews. There was an LA Times report that estimated that between 40 to 75% of players were using cocaine.
So on the conservative side, a little bit less than half of them were just doing cocaine.
Right.
All the time.
And that finally, the Len Bias thing happened after this draft lottery. But
so Len Bias, just, you know, some more context, a year later, the Celtics draft this guy, Len Bias, who is drafted coming, I forgot what school he's coming out of. He's a young
Maryland.
Guy. He's a young guy, so, you know, yeah. 20, 22, something like that. And between the draft and the beginning of the season, dies of a cocaine overdose.
He died that night.
Oh, he died that night.
Yeah.
I wasn't born yet, so it's all right.
Yeah, he
I don't
died
know these things.
Technically the next day, but it was like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Oh, okay.
And this was right when the crack epidemic was starting. Yeah. And yeah, the Len Bias thing, it wrecked the Celtics because the Celtics traded away a bunch of picks to get Len Bias. And then they draft him, and he died that night of a cocaine overdose.
We'll talk a little bit later about the mechanics of how someone wins the draft. But you don't win the draft. You don't win the draft lottery every year, getting one of these high picks. So for that pick to die, like, it's not like they can award them. Oh, you can go next year.
No,
sorry, the guy died. Like, sorry, that's horrible.
Yeah,
don't do so much cocaine.
Yeah, he should have done a little less.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about the way the draft worked before this.
Yeah.
Previously, if you wanted the first pick in the draft, you had to be one of the two worst teams in the league, and then you had to win a coin flip. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the worst or second worst record, you had a 50% chance of getting the number one draft pick.
Yeah.
And they decided to change it in 85 for some reason.
Yeah.
For some reason, they decide in 1985 that it should be 7 teams competing for the number one pick.
Well, that's because if they didn't change it, who would have been the two teams competing for the number one pick?
The Golden State Warriors and the Indiana Pacers.
So San Francisco or Indianapolis.
Yeah, and at this time, the Golden State Warriors were not what they are now. They were a fucking...
They were a D-League
team, basically.
I mean, they won some championships, I think, in the 70s, but
right.
In the 80s, 90s, and all of the 2000s, up until 2012, basically, they were a trash team.
Yeah.
They were the Cleveland Browns of the San Francisco.
Right.
The
if a player went to Golden State, I was just like, oh, I'll never see them again.
They were just, like, so forgettable. The whole franchise was for 30 years, yeah.
So the NBA didn't want that. They did not want Patrick Ewing ending up in Indiana or Golden State, Oakland, San Francisco, whatever. But the other argument was that the old system encouraged teams to just tank the entire season to get that number one pick. The problem is that never stopped. Like, after they changed the Spurs did it. The Spurs did it to get David Robinson and Tim Duncan.
Yeah, so, you know, to just kind of zoom out a bit, they changed this from this thing of the two worst teams will flip a coin and they'll get the 1 and 2 picks to, for the first time in the 85 draft, all right, 7 teams and we'll have a lottery to determine it.
Right.
Right now, it's 14 teams, the worst 14. Every team that doesn't make the playoffs, which is 14 teams, there's a lottery. It's a little bit more statistically, it's a little bit harder to fix, and there's some...
Right.
It's a bit different than how they did the lottery this time. The lottery this time was like literally like sticking your hand in a ball.
It was shady.
It was
very shady.
Exactly. And they still can't. So now they've gone from 2 teams to 7 teams to 14 teams, and they can't fix the tanking angle. The angle of, well, we're not really going to be good this year, so why don't we try to be really bad so we have the highest chance of getting this number one pick? Listen. I don't know if you can get rid of it. This is a bigger conversation that we don't have to talk about right here, but this is going to happen every year. The NFL has a similar thing. The team with the worst record gets the number one pick in the draft.
Yeah.
But we don't see the tanking as much because there's only 16 games. Like, it's like,
yeah,
and you're going to lose the games that you're supposed to lose in the NFL rather than... Basketball is a little bit closer to baseball. It's a little bit more of a coin flip every night. Not every night. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks playing the Golden State Warriors are gonna the Warriors are gonna win most of the time.
But they might lose.
But they might lose one or two games just out of the sort of variance of night to night basketball. So I don't know if you can get rid of tanking, like, unless you come up with something different. The more incentive you have to get this prize at the end, you're going to take advantage of that.
Right.
We saw the Philadelphia 76ers take advantage of that. And I think they're going to try and move in the next few years to something to prevent tanking, where if you get a top three pick, you can't get another top three pick for like another year or two. So even if you're the worst team in the league and you win the lottery, you'll just get pick number four. So,
oh wow,
I think that's how they're trying to curb it. But when you play 82 games a season and you suck, you're just going to keep losing.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's the end of my rant.
Pretty much. And so yeah, they ostensibly the goal here was to stop teams from doing that, but
they've just
really the goal was get Patrick Ewing to New York.
Yeah, but. Really what happens is now seven to ten teams are competing for those seven spots.
Right.
And they wanted to get the Knicks involved in that lottery.
Right. And so they decide to change the draft to a system where it's almost like if you've ever watched the lottery drawings on television, there's a big bowl.
It's less than that. It's like bingo at the local retirement home. Because that the states have to, with the state lottery, there has to be some sort of transparency behind it, because if you find out California is fixing the lottery for some like friend of the comptroller or whatever, then that's not going to be a good look for California or Illinois or whatever.
Yeah, this, they just threw a bunch of envelopes in a big
drum. There's 14 teams. There's 14 teams that are eligible for the lottery. Each team has a different statistical chance of winning the lottery. The team with the worst record has, like, I think, a 25% chance of winning the lottery. And they literally put, like, they don't put a they put, like, 100 balls in there. And they assign each team certain sets of numbers. So, for example, who had the best chance of winning the lottery last year? It was the Phoenix Suns, I think, right?
Yeah, probably.
They were assigned numbers, like, 0001 through 2500, literally. So they literally just draw out the numbers and are like, okay, we have number 4697.
Yeah.
That's tied to the Detroit Pistons. The Detroit Pistons have won. Rather than this time, they literally put seven envelopes in a big ball, like
big clear ball that anyone could see into,
like you would playing bingo.
Right.
And they just spun it around a couple times like they're at a fucking county fair.
Yeah. If you want to watch the video that a lot of what we're talking about next comes from, it's on YouTube, conveniently enough. It's called Did David Stern Fix the 1985 NBA Draft by Mike Corzemba on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It has like a million some views.
It's a short video, too. It's like only 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah,
it's really very short. Digestible. More digestible than this podcast.
Absolutely.
But keep listening.
Yeah, definitely. Please keep listening.
Subscribe.
So, yeah. So what happens with this draft lottery? This is basically the Zapruder film of basketball, because there is video footage of this happening, and it has been examined over and over and over. But what happens is basically they switch to this draft lottery, and the first weird part about it is the guy who brings the envelopes out, a dude named Jack Wagner.
Yeah.
And Jack Wagner he's from the accounting firm of Ernst & Whitney, which is what we always hear. Like, anytime an impartial person has to bring something, it's always an accounting firm.
Yeah. Cut to the Oscars 2 years ago.
Oh, man.
Moonlight drama.
Yeah. So, seemingly, he is a neutral third party. But he also, Ernst & Whitney was the auditing firm for Gulf & Western Incorporated, who owned the New York Knicks at the time.
Oh.
So, that part's weird.
Well, as we know, in New York City, there's only one accounting company firm, and it's Ernst & Whitney.
Did we know that?
No, it's a joke. No, it's a joke. It's New York. There's tons of big high-level investment banks and accounting firms and all sorts of boring.
You lived there. I didn't know if you had it.
Literally,
no one fucks with any other accounting firms.
Yeah.
So what's really weird, and let's just watch. I mean, the people at home will have to fire up this video and watch with us. It starts around the 3 minute and 44 second point.
Yeah.
Is when they start talking about the actual
depositing of the envelopes.
Right.
So this guy, Jack Wagner, who works for the accounting firm that has ties to the company that owns
the Knicks,
comes out onto the stage, and they had this big glass or plastic ball, and he throws, there are seven envelopes, he throws the envelopes into the ball.
Right.
So this is where we're at.
And take it away, internet video.
Stern selected them. As Wagner tosses the envelopes into the plastic ball, he presents the first piece of evidence that the draft was rigged. Look closely as he bangs the fourth envelope, which contained the New York Knicks draft card, against the metal of the plastic ball. As
he's not even subtle about it.
Okay, so he tosses like three or four there's seven envelopes. He tosses like three in, and there's sort of an axle in the middle of the ball. And he tosses three in without a problem. And then on the fourth one, he just like smashes the envelope up against the axle. Like, he clearly has the motion right. Then after he drops this now kind of crumpled and folded envelope into the ball, he then, for the other three envelopes, tosses them in completely normally and doesn't smash them into this axle in the middle of the ball.
And another good question to ask about how he does it also is, if you're going to spin the thing and mix them up, why not just toss them all in at once? Why did they have to go in like you're dealing cards?
Maybe. I don't know.
And so the argument here is that he basically...
To prove that there are seven... Just as a, you know...
Yeah, I suppose.
To prove that there are seven envelopes. Come on, man.
So the argument here is that he basically bends the corner of this envelope so David Stern can see it.
Yeah.
And will know which envelope contains the Knicks card so they win the draft. And
the envelope falls into the ball. If we freeze time, we can see that the corner of the envelope is now bent.
What's funny about that part is I cannot see that it's bent in that clip that he shows.
No, this clip is not very good because it's like this is a VHS transfer. This is like some ESPN,
right?
Like, you know, airing of this from 1985. The cameras aren't as good. They don't have HD. I can't tell from this, but
the next clip,
the next shot actually shows it really clearly.
And so that's the first part, is this guy throwing this envelope in and bending the corner. That's where the physical part of this conspiracy starts. And so the next part is David Stern. And I think the video here makes a really great point.
Hardly anything suspicious about this as the lottery continues.
Yeah, David Stern.
His head.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's the
commissioner
of the NBA.
Of the league. And he's actually going to be the one who sticks his hand in and pulls out the cards.
Right. And
the ball is rotated as Stern looks intently at the envelope.
He does not take his eyes off
the
envelope.
He then walks up to the ball, ready to select the envelope that will give the team inside it the first pick in the draft. As he prepares himself, Stern lets out a very deep breath.
Why did he do that?
I don't know. I can't I can't prove anything of that in a court of law.
I am not
a big city lawyer, but
you can't prove anything in the court of law. But this is the first time the NBA has ever built this contraption to fuck around with on draft day. Like, this should be a very lighthearted moment for David Stern, and he looks petrified.
He does look a bit like if he selects the wrong one, like his family's going to be murdered.
He does.
Yeah, that's what the sigh is sort of reminiscent of, but I can't say that.
Yeah, I mean,
it means anything. I think that's the least of the pieces of evidence here.
Yeah, I mean, it's
inadmissible in my court. Judge Joe Brown over here.
Let's go on.
Obviously indicating that he is nervous. Is he nervous about being in front of a lot of people? Something he's probably never faced as commissioner of the NBA?
That was sarcasm, folks.
Is he nervous about something else?
Like having his kneecaps broken by the mafia if Patrick Ewing doesn't
Ernst
go
Whitney,
to New York.
What up? The hood fucks with
the next few
Ernst
seconds are what cements the 1985 draft lottery as one of the NBA's biggest conspiracies. As Stern reaches into the plastic ball, we are going to freeze. As the camera
Now, okay. Here, you really see that bent corner.
It's bent. It's bent, baby.
It's very obviously bent.
Get
Shirley picks up the bent corner on the envelope that contains the Knicks pick. Surely, if we can see the bend now on a video that is from 1985, presumably Good Stern point. Can see it in real life. Now, as Stern reaches into the ball, he clearly grabs multiple envelopes as another envelope has landed on top of the Knicks envelope. He then, for some reason, flips the envelope he has grabbed around before dropping all but one. The one with the bent quarter. The one that gave the Knicks the first pick in the 1985 draft. And so there you have it.
It's more convincing if you watch the video yourself, probably, than just Brett and I trying to explain
Listen,
it to you.
If you are the commissioner of a fantasy football league, or at I don't know how you do it, but my league does it. We literally all put fucking our names in a hat and someone throws like everyone just rips up a piece of paper. If you are just picking randomly out of a hat and you really don't care about the outcome or you understand the outcome to be truly neutral, what you do is a normal human sticks their hand in, doesn't even look, and just sort of wishes the hand around once the hand is in there to not only has it been spun around by the ball or the hat or whatever, but I'm going to make it even more random by just sort of shaking my hand inside of there and grabbing the name that says, Brett, you're the first pick of the draft. He has his eyes laser focused on the bent envelope the entire time. He sticks his hand in. There is an envelope on top of the bent envelope. He reaches his hand to avoid the envelope on top of the bent envelope and flips it and picks out the bent one. I didn't even know about the whole bent envelope theory. There had been this thing, this rumor as well, there's no way to prove that this guy Wagner from Ernst & Whitney had put the Knicks envelope in a freezer all day. And that so when Stern put his hand in, there would be a cold envelope.
Right. And it could have been a combination of those
two things. It could have been that. There's no way to prove that.
Right.
So I'd only heard about the frozen envelope theory is that the envelope had been in a fridge or a freezer all day. And then it was added to the ball. But this is really actually more convincing than the frozen envelope.
Yeah, I think it is really convincing. And the thing about it, in the book we mentioned at the top of the episode, that writer includes I won't read the whole thing, but he includes a snippet from an article written in the Dallas Morning News the next day by a writer named Randy Galloway. And this writer basically says, in the weeks leading up to the draft, everyone was like, the Knicks are going to get Patrick Ewing and the NBA is going to make sure the Knicks get Patrick Ewing. And then the draft happens and the Knicks get Patrick Ewing. Yeah, yeah. And this guy's just like, we can't prove it, but it seems fishy. So this was immediately upon when this happened, people were like, that's weird.
Not even immediately. Weeks before, people knew that the combination of the teams in the draft, it was like the L.A. Clippers. Yeah, they're from L.A., but who cares? Indiana, Golden State, a few other just real sucker teams. They were in there, and everyone before the draft was like, oh, yeah, I wonder how New York's going to win this one. I wonder how that's going to happen, but it's going to happen. They knew that this was going to happen. So then when it did, it confirmed the whole thing.
Right. And a lot of times when there's a conspiracy theory, people look to the result, and they're like, well, what they wanted to happen didn't happen, so it's not true. And in this case, the Knicks winning a championship didn't happen, but Patrick Ewing absolutely turned that team around.
Yeah.
I think they
went to one NBA finals, or was that he even on the team in 99?
He went to an NBA finals. Yeah. The one where they played the Heat.
No, I think
right?
they lost to the Spurs. I think it was 99 was when the season was cut short because of a strike.
48 hours after the draft, the Knicks got 1,000 season ticket requests. Back in the day when you had to call a motherfucker to do it.
Called Ticketron.
Yeah. The NBA, they obviously renewed their deal with CBS. Ewing won NBA Rookie of the Year. I didn't realize this. He took them to 13 consecutive playoff appearances.
Yeah, they were good. They were good for the 90s. They didn't win a championship. I mean, when you're playing the Bulls in the playoffs every year with Michael Jordan, it's not going to be great.
Right,
it's not going to be great for your odds, but like they were a contender that were in the mix for the next 15 years.
Yeah, and they kind of just ran into Michael Jordan, and we're talking on, actually, it'll be up by the time people hear this, but me and Brett have a sports podcast, an unnamed sports podcast as of now, and we talk about LeBron James on the inaugural episode.
LeBron James.
I love that fucking kid. He's so the best. Good. And that's kind of what happened to LeBron early in his career, is he was taking Cleveland to the finals and to the semifinals and just always running up against some really fucking great team, like the Celtics at the time, and the Spurs.
Yeah,
But still, Patrick Ewing took them to 13 straight playoff appearances, two NBA finals. By the time he left the Knicks, they had a streak of 347 consecutive sellout games at Madison Square Garden. During his 15 seasons with the team, in total they had 394 sellouts. The 39 years prior to him joining the Knicks, the team only had 205 sellouts.
I don't believe sellout data.
No.
Sellout data is don't believe anytime anyone's like, oh yeah, we've sold out this many.
Yeah, because a lot of times
selling it, because basically what can happen before a game, or what does happen anytime these teams, I think the Red Sox have had like consecutive sellouts for like 80 years or something.
Right.
Like that just ended. What happens at the end of the game is the ticket office is like, all right, we have 300 tickets left. What do we do? Oh, let's give them to a charity. Okay. And they literally just drop them off at the door of like a charity.
Right.
3 hours before the game starts. And like, yeah, you guys can show up or whatever. Or say that you did and just throw the tickets in the trash.
Right, right.
So that's – and I've worked in ticketing before. I've lived in New York and I've worked in Broadway ticketing. That's what happens when you want to maintain a sellout or give the appearance of a sellout, is you just – you print the tickets, you comp them, and then you literally throw them in the trash, or you just give them – or you literally give them away to people.
Right.
For free. So that it is sold out. It's just that – 1,000 of the seats were comped and you gave them away on the street, or you threw them in the trash can.
Yeah, but he did turn things around.
Yeah.
Like, for New York, definitely. They just didn't win a championship because Jordan's the greatest of all time. That's all. So that's the Knicks NBA draft lottery conspiracy.
I'm more convinced than I was 2 days ago.
Yeah, I buy this one for sure.
I never saw the envelope folding business. I never saw that. I'd only heard about the frozen envelope thing, which is, you just like, can't prove.
Yeah.
You can't prove whether this one guy who was like alone with the envelopes all day put one of them in a fridge. I don't know.
How funny would it be if he forgot to bring it with him?
What if
still at home in his freezer?
What if he accidentally brought out a box of popsicles instead of the Knicks?
That would be great.
These Nestle
creamsicle wins the first pick in the draft. So that's the episode. This is a Patreon-only episode, so you don't have to subscribe to anything, baby. It's your Patreon dollars hard at work.
Was it good for you?
I bet it was good for them.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Who knows? So next week, I don't know what we're talking about on the Conspiracy Pod, but check out me and Brett's sports podcast. We'll probably add a third co-host at some point.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll come up with a name for it, or we'll just call it Unnamed Sports Podcast.
Yeah.
Who knows?
What's the best SEO title for it?
Just Sports Podcast.
Sports Podcast. Free. For free.
What do you have to plug, Brett?
Guys, this season of Big Brother is heating up.
I need to get this on the soundboard.
I know. I didn't bring mine today. Big Brother's great this year. Just on the feeds last night, there was some drama about who jizzed on the bathroom seat. So much good stuff going on. I have a podcast about it. It's for free. It's called Hey Julie. Find it on Twitter at Hey Julie BB. Search for it wherever you get your pods.
You'll find it.
Listen, you don't have much to do this summer. So, like, regardless of whether you even watch Big Brother, like, it's pretty easy to follow. They just vote someone out of the house each week. Whatever. It's very stupid. Me and my friend Danielle, we're both very stupid people. And we just sort of goof off on this stupid show for the summer. So join us at Hey Julie.
Give it a listen. All right, let's get the fuck out of here. Brett, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you.
People of Earth, your planet is about to be destroyed.